pick up the discussion of the issue of so-called multiple truths. That is to say, according to the basic principles of Judaism, when we ascribe any value to any other religion. And this is a controversy now, because some Orthodox rabbis have made statements to the effect that yes, that there's we don't have the monopoly on truth, and that there's validity in Christianity or in Islam. They didn't say for Jews. They said that God speaks to the Christians through Christianity, and to the Muslims through Islam. To me, that's also very, very strange, because they seem to be limiting it. That's okay if you're a Christian. It seems to be that depending on who you are, that truth is applicable. That's another issue, because if you're going to ascribe value to it, so then another problem of this is that you're kind of diminishing the problem of proselytizing. You see, throughout all of Jewish history, the Jews had tremendous resistance. Of course, religious Jews, but all kinds of Jews had tremendous resistance to Jews being forced to convert. And of course, you know that there's a history of martyrdom, where Jews were prepared to sacrifice their lives rather than convert to Christianity or to Islam. So, I mean, it turns out that according to this, it's not such a terrible thing. Because now you're diminishing the entire evil. That the Jews recognize that there's a great evil over here. That's a separate issue. Of course, they would probably say that they only mean that it has validity for non-Jews. But to me, that's very difficult to understand because, again, it doesn't seem to fit with my notion of truth. This whole idea of multiple truths doesn't seem to make any sense, because it seems to be a negation of the whole idea of truth. If something is true, then it eliminates that which is contrary to it. Anytime you posit a theory in any area, so if that is proven to be true, then you know that all the other theories are automatically wrong. You can't have many truths. It just doesn't make sense. You can only have one truth. Because truth means that it's correct. It's in line with reality. This is the proper description of reality. So if this is the proper description of reality, so any other description can't be in accordance with reality, unless you're going to say that there's multiple realities. If you think into it on a logical basis, the very notion does not make sense. If you're viewing religion in that context, if you're viewing religion as being based upon some ultimate truth, and truth being something which corresponds to reality, so then how can you have multiple truths? Just like you can't have it in science. Any scientist would say that that's absurd. He's asserting the idea of multiple truths. If you put it in a different way, if you went one step further, I don't know if the person would be willing to maintain that position anymore. You're saying that there's multiple realities. That I don't know if everybody's willing to grab. You see, as long as you say it's multiple truths and you don't really face the consequences of what you mean, so the idea seems to be appealing. It's a very appealing idea these days. What you're really saying is that there's no such thing as truth. That's where people use that. If there's no such thing as truth, so then you have your opinion, I have my opinion. And there may be areas where it's a matter of opinion. In terms of music, where it's pretty much subjective. You're talking about subjective. So you like this music or flavors of ice cream. So can anybody say that chocolate is the best flavor? That's a different issue. Because there, you're not talking about an objective reality. There is no objective reality in terms of what's the best flavor, since by definition it's a personal experience. So if it's a personal experience, so people can have different experiences. Some people like chocolate, some people like vanilla. So you can't say that that's true. That then you can, if you want to use this idea in a loose kind of a way of multiple truths. I don't like to use the word truth because it's not really truth. It's tastes. When you're in the realm of, people have to make this distinction between the realm of taste and artistic, some type of a artistic appreciation, where, to begin with, you're not describing something in objective reality. You're talking about people, what they like, what they find appealing. So then you could say, fine, there's multiple kinds of good music, let's say, if you want to define it as music that people enjoy. You can't say that your form of music is better. as long as you're defining music, good music, in terms of some subjective reaction. If you want to go to a different realm and look at music objectively, in terms of you have to establish certain principles of how you determine what's better in music. But that's not what people mean. That's one thing. But in the realm of truth, meaning an idea which corresponds to reality, so then it can't be that there's multiple truths. If you define truth as being that which is in accordance with the idea that's in accordance with reality. Reality is the ultimate barometer. Unless you're saying that there's multiple realities, I don't think anyone seriously is going to maintain that. Correct? Being raised, that perhaps the meaning is that Judaism is a system, and it sets out a certain objective that people are supposed to attain. So why can't we say that it not only sets out an objective and then the result, but a certain means of how to achieve it? That's the question. I assume that's what you mean. Is it a means or an end? Well, it's really both. It seems that it's both. Then the question is being raised, if that's the case, perhaps the meaning is that you can have alternative means to arriving at the same ends. And if that's the case, would I still maintain that the other religions cannot be true? Are you getting me all true? This is the dispute between Judaism and the other religions, Christianity or Islam. Is it a case where we all agree as to what the objective is, and the disagreement is only in terms of the best way to obtain it, to achieve it? Or is it something quite different? Is it basically a dispute, not just in terms of the means, but because you can't even determine the means until you agree upon the goal? Or is it rather much more serious than that? A dispute in terms of what the ultimate objective is. Okay? There's no question that the disagreement is very, very fundamental, not just in terms of the means. The means is determined by the goal. If this is the case, then there would have been harmonious relations between all the other religions. If they all agreed on the same goal, generally speaking, when people agree on the same goal, it's just a question of what's the best means, so that doesn't divide them. It doesn't lead to such tremendous tension and confrontation, which you find throughout history. Why would the Christians have been trying to destroy the Jews throughout all of history and forcing them, compelling them to convert? What's the difference? We all agree, basically. You can see just from that. That's a symptom of the fact that it's very, very significant. Moreover, if you go back to what I said yesterday, what we are obliged to maintain in light of our concept of the foundation of Torah, in light of our concept of revelation, revelation means that the Torah is true, and it rules out, there's many ideas contained in the idea of revelation, it rules out that there will ever be another revelation. The basic fundamentals that pertain to our concept, which will negate the Christians and the Muslims who agree. They say, they all agree that this is the starting point, that this is God's, everybody agrees that this is God's revelation. But then they proceed to this thought, the basic conclusions that have to flow from that. And that is that this is God's only revelation to mankind. That's contained in the Torah itself. And we'll go through the sources to the extent that we discussed. That's why I went right to the point that it's absolutely forbidden to add or to take away. You can't add or take away. That's based upon the principle. These are all interrelated principles. That the Torah is eternal, relevant to every time and place. It's perfect, therefore it's not subject to any amendment. It constitutes the only revelation that will ever come from God in terms of giving mankind a religion. You will have prophets coming thereafter, but the prophets will not serve the purpose of establishing anything new in terms of the fundamental objective of Torah, which is thus to establish the religion. I'm using the word religion loosely over here. And that's why I said yesterday that this is a litmus test for a Navi. That a Navi who has all the qualifications for Nevuah, and even if he should perform the most impressive types of miracles, and maintains that God spoke to him and God sent him with a message, And that message would be in terms of adding a new mitzvah to the Torah, a change in the Torah, to add a new mitzvah to the Torah, or to remove a mitzvah of the Torah. And he can back this up with all kinds of miracles, even if they're more impressive, the Rambam says, than the miracles that we saw at Sinai, or in our history. If that's the content of his message, then he is a Navi Sheker, he's a false prophet, and he is put to death. Because the basis for our obligation to listen to a prophet is the Torah itself. Why do we have to listen to a prophet? It's just that the Torah itself, which we witnessed. We were at Sinai, we witnessed all the demonstrations and God speaking so from the heavens. Telling us that this is the Torah, and in the Torah, if a person, if a Navi, if a person passes the test and he's qualified as a Navi, so we have to listen to him. But it's only because of our belief in the Torah itself. But if he's coming to contradict the Torah itself, so then it has to be that he's false. It doesn't matter what he, what types of miracles he performs. So you see from this that it's a fundamental idea of the belief in Sinai that this revelation is eternal, that it can't be changed. God will not exchange. It's not, this revelation is not temporary. It's not subject to change, and it's not limited only to the Jews. It's for all of mankind. Which means to say that the notion that God's concern for the rest of mankind, that God expresses his will for the rest of mankind through a different kind of a revelation, is absolutely false. We didn't discuss this idea yesterday. There's no question, this is mentioned in the article, that the Torah, the system of Taryak, the dust, the religion, so to speak, that's revealed in the Torah is for the Jewish people. That's essentially directed to the Jewish people. Only the Jewish people are obliged to practice it. That's the bris. What about the rest of mankind? Is the Torah oblivious to the rest of mankind? As I say, the Torah is only concerned with the Jews, and the rest of mankind, they have to fend for themselves. Or does it also address the rest of mankind? The answer is that it does. The Torah is the book of instruction for all of mankind. All of mankind is obliged to conform to the Torah. This is because this is the revelation of truth for all of mankind. Except that for the rest of mankind, they're not obligated to keep the 613. If a Gentile comes to a Jew and asks, what does God require of me according to the Torah? The answer is the seven Noahide laws, the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. If you notice in this article, well, I don't know if you read the article yet, the Reform rabbi over there tries to defend Rabbi Sachs by saying that, you see, within Judaism, in the Torah, that it's not limited. Salvation is not limited to Judaism. That term, salvation, is not limited to Judaism because of the, you see that they accept the idea of the Noahide system. But to me, that's being disingenuous. That doesn't back up these statements. That doesn't in any way endorse Christianity or Islam, because it's true. What he's saying is true, but that doesn't mean that the Torah accepts foreign or external religions, because the seven Noahide laws is not external to Torah. It's part of Torah itself. But Christianity and Islam are external to Torah. You don't see any basis at all that there's any recognition of the validity. Now, let's work it through. Let's play it out. In order to have another religion, both Christianity and Islam were founded, so to speak, from within Judaism. That is to say that, well, in Christianity you have Jesus, who was Jewish. In Islam, you have Muhammad, who was not Jewish, but affirmed the validity of scriptures, of the so-called Old Testament. And Christianity maintains the same. Now, if that is the case, how would Judaism look at these two religions? They both are based upon the idea of change. That the system that God gave at Sinai was limited in time. It was only applicable at a certain time. Or the mitzvot, it entails another idea, and that is to say that the obligation of Sinai also entails that you must interpret the Torah, the meaning of the Torah, in accordance with the oral law. Because that's what it says, "Vagam b'cha yaminu liolam." That's in Moshe. Moshe, it means Moshe Rabbeinu, and all of the ones who follow him in terms of the explanation of the Torah, because it's impossible to decipher what the Torah means on the basis of the written law itself. So, all of these other religions are based upon the idea, it's a negation of the fact that the Torah is eternal, because it's not eternal. It's only limited in time. It was relevant then. And it's also based upon the fact that there's a modification, that they received the revelation that it is the will of God that people should start doing X, Y, and Z, whatever Christianity, because that religion didn't exist before Jesus, so that's new. So therefore, their prophet, whoever it is saying that it's the will of God that people should now begin to do X, Y, and Z. So therefore, you're saying that it's based upon a new revelation. Now, any prophet that comes along, even if he should perform great miracles, and he says that God commanded me in a new law, something which is not in the Torah, or to change something to the contrary, even if he's just changing something in the Torah and does not maintain that there's a new revelation, a new law, he's put to death. So clearly, if a prophet comes along and maintains that God instructed him that the Torah is not binding anymore, is not applicable anymore, or there's major changes, that clearly is a refutation. That person is refuting the Nevuah of Moshe, which our entire foundation is based upon, and it, by definition, is a false prophet. So clearly, according to this, Jesus is a false prophet, if that's indeed what he prophesied. I'm not going into the whole historical issue of what he said, and then the later Christians, what they did, and I'm not going into the historical aspect. Let's keep it simple. Let's assume that Jesus came and he said that this is his revelation, whatever, whoever's revelation is, doesn't make any difference to me. And the same is true with Mohammed, the prophet of Islam. Which makes it even worse because they claim to affirm that they believe that God did reveal the Old Testament. Well, if that's the case, how can there be any change? That's contrary to Judaism. Therefore, they're false prophets as soon as they maintain that God revealed a system to them which is outside of Torah. Cannot be a system outside of Torah. Therefore, if they are false prophets, so the religion that's founded on the basis of their ideas must be labeled a false religion. It's kind of simple if you work it out. It's almost mathematical, in my opinion. There's no logical basis. All right. I'm going to give another guy a chance, if you understand. There's no logical basis according to the premises, if you accept the premises, if you accept Sinai. That's why I'm framing it that way, because we're talking about rabbis, Orthodox rabbis, that presumably accept the foundations. An understanding of the Yesodas, of the foundations, of the Ikarim, of Judaism, which all center around the concept of Sinai, Torah Mi-Sinai, which is the basis we accept the Torah because we're convinced that the event occurred. So therefore it comes from God, and therefore it's true. If it is true, so then we have to investigate. We have to go look at the Torah. Does the Torah maintain it's true, but it's temporary, it's going to change later on? All these types of questions. If you maintain that it's eternally relevant, that it's not subject, it's perfect, it's not subject to change, that there will never be another revelation, which is related to that idea, obviously. Because if it's perfect and it's not subject to change, so you have to deduce that there'll never be another revelation. And on the basis of that principle, a Navi is not permitted l'chadesh davar. A Navi is not permitted to introduce anything new, a new mitzvah. And if he does so, we know that he's a false prophet, and a false prophet has to be put to death. Therefore, anyone that comes and maintains that he received the revelation, and God told him to found a new religion, which is different, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, if it's a new religion, so obviously it's different. As soon as he says that, he's false. Because we know from the Torah that this is the only revelation that will ever come from God in terms of establishing the rules that mankind is to live by, in terms of what we would call religion. It doesn't mean to say that there will never be prophets afterwards, because the idea that after God gives you the system to live by, that God will continue his providential relationship to the Jewish people, there'll be further prophets. The purpose of those prophets, the Rambam describes is not in the realm of religious instruction. That's the teachers that you have. That's the sages. Nor can it be. It cannot be in the realm of giving you a new system, of making a modification of the system. Indeed, if a prophet would try to make any kind of modification, he's ipso facto a false prophet and must be put to death. Therefore, I maintain that it is an impossibility on that basis alone to ascribe any validity to Christianity and Islam, since they do not come from God. They cannot come from God. They are purely human inventions. And they're false. You can't have a human invention. You can't, because this is the truth. This is the true religion. So it's a human invention. It's like you have the true cure for a disease. Now somebody else is maintaining that there's a different cure, when in fact there can't be. This is the only cure possible. So it's a human invention. It's a fantasy. Now, if you want to evaluate that religion, let's say it's a human invention, and say, well, one second, these people were intelligent people. Maybe there's some value. Maybe there's some good ideas. For example, you had back in the 18th century, people were deists, they were called. Philosophers like many of the founding fathers of this country, deism. That is to say that they rejected, this is a very intelligent position, they rejected conventional religions. Well, they didn't really know the basis of Judaism. They probably didn't know Judaism too well. Although the founding fathers were respectful of Judaism, a lot of their ideas can be traced back to Judaism. But when they rejected religion, it's Christianity, essentially. That's the religion that they were familiar with. They maintained, however, that the universe has a creator. They believe in God. This is sort of like Einstein's approach. He didn't believe in organized religion, but he definitely believed that in the existence of God. And he had a concept that the purpose of studying the universe was to cultivate a certain sense of awe. His writings on the idea, this spiritual experience of the scientist, is very, very close to the Rambam's description of Ahavat Hashem, of the love of God. So if these people were to work out some kind of a system where they'd get together and they'd discuss ideas, and then they'd work out certain ethical ideas of how people ought to behave, and maybe they'd work out some practices that people should engage in. So we say, well, here, these people worked out a new religion, because they don't accept Judaism, because they don't know that Judaism is unique. They just put it in the same category as organized religions. So in that situation, I would say it's a human invention. But just because it's a human invention doesn't mean that it's worthless. It could have merit, but then we'd have to analyze the ideas and the premises and the objectives, what they look at it as being the good. And it may be very similar. It may be sort of parallel. In which case, we would say that we wouldn't look at it as being an evil, necessarily. The truth of the matter is that the Gentiles are really obligated to follow the seven Noahide laws. However, given that these people aren't aware of the seven Noahide laws and of the system of Torah, the validity of Torah, so then your judgment about the quality of the religion might be it's intelligent. Just because it's a human invention doesn't necessarily mean that it's corrupt. It all depends. But this is a rare case. What it depends upon is whether it's a system which is arrived at through honesty and real study and genuine knowledge. If that's people like Thomas Jefferson, people like Einstein, real thinkers, of course you would have to maintain that even if it's very good, it can't be equal to Torah for anyone, because it's still human reason, and human reason has its limitations as opposed to a perfect system which is revealed by God. That would be the exception, though, because most cases where you would talk about a man-made religion, it would stem from the religious emotions in people, and it would involve all kinds of nonsensical ideas, which is true for all the religions. That what I describe, a religion which is founded by men of truth and science, is a real, I don't think it ever existed. I know that Einstein had the idea. He wanted to form that kind of a religion of scientists who recognize the existence of the Creator. But I don't think it ever came to pass. I'm not aware of any such phenomenon. Therefore, most of the organized, all the organized religions which are man-made, if you will study the ideas, you will see how utterly absurd and nonsensical they are. Not just that they that they're not impressive. Not just that they're very inferior. You can't use the word inferior to Torah, but they're ridiculous. They don't make any sense. You look at the questions being raised in terms of a Navi, that a prophet, even if we said that even if he performed miracles that were greater, so to speak, or more impressive than the ones of Moshe, we would not listen to him if he's contradicting Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's because the basis of following anyone, a Navi or anyone else, has nothing to do with miracles. We don't follow a person. If a person performed what appears to us as a miracle, so that's no guarantee of the truthfulness of what you're saying. We're not obliged to listen to a Navi because of the magnitude of the miracle. There's no connection over there. The reason why the only thing that binds us, that obliges us, is that we witnessed. We witnessed the king speaking to us on Sinai. That's why how the Rambam explains that in spite of all the miracles that Moshe had done, the real foundation for keeping Torah was not sufficient that it be through miracles. It had to be something which was beyond doubt. And that's, we heard from the Creator himself. So something that you hear yourself can't be contradicted by what somebody else says. That's personal, and that's like being a witness. If you witness a murder, so you saw who did the killing, or you saw who was murdered, so you know that that's the truth. It would be, for example, like you're on the Sanhedrin, and you happen to witness the murder. And witnesses come in, unimpeachable, can't be contradicted, and they testify that somebody else did it. So even if you can't contradict them in accordance with the principles of interrogation and so forth, they pass that test. So what are you going to say? Well, they passed the test. I couldn't contradict them, so they're good witnesses. So the truth is like they're saying, in spite of the fact that you saw it yourself. So that's the basic idea. That's the analogy that the Rambam brings. That the only reason you listen to witnesses is that's a decree of God. It doesn't mean to say that if witnesses came and testified and we interrogated them and we couldn't break them down, so therefore we know that that's the truth. No, that's not the reason. The reason is there has to be a system, and in the system you have to establish the facts, and God decreed that this is the manner in which it should be done. But it's possible that these witnesses have their story together, like what the Rambam says, that the testimony is firm. It has, and you can't contradict it, and then you have to accept it. But it's possible that they are conspirators. That's a possibility. It could be they were highly intelligent, highly planned out, and they fooled the system. But that's the mitzvah. You have to operate in accordance with Eidos. But if that's the case, you realize that Eidos can't be that powerful that it will override something that you saw with your own eyes. The same is true over here. The basis of the system of Torah is Sinai. And Sinai is where we heard from the Creator himself. This is his will. And, of course, you didn't hear the entire Torah at Sinai. You heard the part of the Torah, the Aseret HaDibros. But you also heard that God endorsed Moshe Rabbeinu, that the rest will be transmitted. So the system by which the Torah will be made known to us is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu in terms of bringing the revelation to us, the rest of the revelation, and Moshe Rabbeinu in terms of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the interpretation. So that's something that we have direct. And part of that Torah is that you have to listen to a Navi, that God will send prophets, and their purpose will not be to increase on the mitzvot, it'll just be to advise the people or to warn them, to do tshuva, whatever the prophets warn the people about. Therefore, if a prophet should come, we only listen to him if he conforms to the proper description of the Torah gives. And that proper description is that he has all these qualities, but that he's not going to be saying anything which contradicts the Torah. If he says anything which contradicts the Torah, so he's not the prophet that's described by the Torah, so we know that he's false. Because he's coming to contradict what you know to be true. Therefore, if he says that there's a new revelation, he's contradicting what you know to be true. He's a false prophet. So it doesn't matter how impressive the miracles are.